Lord.
Previously in Aphon Kiss, written and read by Alice Dale, Gloria was persistently asking William personal questions about his marriage and children until he asked why she was childless. Although saying she didn't want any, her mind went back to being pregnant at 18 and planning an abortion.
How about a coffee? John suggested.
Good idea. Sorry I can't invite you to lunch this time, Irene apologised. We're going home to our one egg each on toast for lunch.
Coffee's a good idea,
David said.
Lead on to the nearest cafe. My treat.
The nearest cafe's miles away. Our house is nearer, Irene said.
So, how have you been keeping Irene?
David asked over coffee. Right as rain, she answered, patting her tummy proudly. Then David asked,
have you seen Craig lately?
Saw him and Pam last night, John replied. And incidentally, they're planning their wedding for June next year when Craig finishes uni, which means he'll start Jordan Hill Teachers College at the end of August, Irene piped up, adding, but he's already been doing private tutoring to bring in the pennies.
Yes, I knew about that before.
Unable to finish the sentence, David waved his hands pointlessly. Irene finished it for him. Before Father Dempsey put the kibosh on things. Colour rose to her cheeks. I feel really angry about that. I don't suppose I'll stop being a Catholic, but this has shaken my faith. Mother has told me that in all this time, you two have never slept together. Now it was David who turned quite pink. I think that's proof enough that you're both morally stable and not pretending to sanctify some sleazy affair. Mum is a widow and your wife deserted you. When your divorce goes through, the church should welcome you as a married couple.
If only they could see it that way, Irene. But there are even complications about the divorce.
He went on to tell them what he'd learned from Neil, and their faces fell.
See, that's why I came here today. I just had to talk to someone. And I don't want to force myself on your mother.
Oh, God, this is so unfair, John said, shaking his head. Way home by bus, David's mind was in a turmoil. It seemed he had spent the last 2 years on a mental and emotional seesaw. Will she? Won't she? His hopes rising when she agreed to see Father Dempsey, then dashed when they got his, or rather the church's, answer. He understood why she saw no future for them, but seeing her every day, yet being without her, was heartbreaking, especially remembering all the happy times they'd spent together. He began to realise that he was grieving for her as though she had died. And what must a widower do when he loses the love of his life? Force himself to start living again. Reluctantly, he decided to change his mind about turning down an invitation to dinner that Jenny McGrath had made during the week. She had come to his office, ostensibly to discuss a badly behaved student, but when they agreed he was a difficult case and they needed more time to decide on the way to deal with him, she had said,
"Tell you what, why not come to my place to discuss this further? I'll even give you dinner if you come on Saturday evening.
That's the only one I have free, I'm afraid. Although we wouldn't want to discuss Matthew until the other guests leave. You look as if you could do with a good meal, and I'm not a bad cook. Unsure of the situation, he had said he'd let her know, and didn't. Now he decided if there were going to be other guests, he might enjoy some company and a good meal. That might disperse another gloomy Saturday evening on his own. So next day, he asked Jenny if her invitation still stood for the next Saturday. After a pretense of looking up her diary, she said, "You're in luck. It isn't often I have two Saturdays in a row when I'm free. Although last Saturday was soon filled when you didn't give me an answer."
"Sorry about that,"
he said sheepishly. "You're forgiven. I'll expect you at 7:30. Catherine was becoming excited at being involved in such a daring adventure. The Friday night went exactly as Gloria had planned, and she thought Saturday would be too. But Saturday became a nightmare when Gloria couldn't stop the bleeding. She came out of the bathroom, as white as the towel she was holding between her thighs, with blood on her hands and trailing down her legs. Catherine's hand shot to her mouth as she gasped, "Oh my God! Well, don't just stand there. Call a taxi. There's a number beside the phone. Say the destination is the Western Infirmary." All that was left of that memory of that ghastly day was the doctor telling her she was lucky to have survived, but she would never have any children. Gloria wondered now if that life-changing experience accounted for her accepting David's proposal 6 months later in order to have a settled life with a reliable man who was much approved of by her parents, not realizing that the effects of her chastening experience would soon wear off. She hadn't told David that she would never have a family, and she certainly had no intention of telling William. She was shaken out of her memories by William saying,
"Have you really served divorce papers on your husband?"
With a little cough, she pulled herself upright. "Well, I've instructed one of the lawyers who handles divorces to do that, but he's usually snowed under. Goodness knows when he'll get around to it."
"Then cancel it tomorrow morning."
"Is that an order, sir?"
"Yes, it bloody well is. What if I don't survive this next mission? Patricia is my next of kin. I mean, she'd automatically receive all the paperwork connected with me. Can you imagine what receiving your divorce papers, citing me as co-respondent on top of my death certificate, would do to her? Could you live with that?"
When no reply came, he added,
"Of course you could. How stupid of me. Yes, you could. I don't suppose you're concerned about how your husband, David, did you say, will react to all this?"
"Well, for a start, I won't be on any mission where I could lose my life. And you've answered my question about you going overseas. Anyway, I've put down my mother as my next of kin, and she lives in Kenya now. So he wouldn't know whether I was alive or dead. But if you're referring to the divorce, David will have received my letter by now telling him about it. I even gave him the name of the lawyer he should use and told him the one I'm using. I thought he ought to be the first to know, and I'm sure he'll be very sad, but he'll get over it. He hasn't heard from me since I left Glasgow. So he's probably guessed by now that I've lost interest, and I doubt if he'll be all that surprised."
"You know, I feel vicariously sorry for that poor man."
"Oh, he'll survive. He's second head in a school full of women teachers. I'll bet he gets plenty offers when they hear of the divorce."
"Didn't you say he's Catholic? They don't accept divorce, do they?"
"Yes, he is, but I'm not Catholic. So that doesn't affect me."
"Why does that not surprise me? Now, will you please give me your word that my name will be taken off your divorce application?
If it's not too late. You realize that will throw me into the arms of someone I don't care a jot for.
Oh, poor little you. Now, you get in touch with your solicitor first thing tomorrow morning and report back to me immediately after.
Yes, sir. Even in the dark, he was aware of her sharp salute.
We're only a few miles from camp now. I'll pull into the first space I can find for the changeover.
15 minutes later, he spotted a pull-in at a bus stop. With no bus in sight, he made use of it, pulling well forward in order to leave room behind the car.
Okay, change over quickly before a bus comes.
Both jumped out their respective sides, and as they passed each other behind the boot, she grasped his arm and slid her hand down to his, curling her fingers into his palm. Then, her lips forming a kiss, she backed onto the road, her eyes fixed on him, causing a serious accident.
Thank you.